Do you ever wonder what's happening behind the scenes of the multi-trillion dollar fashion industry? In the new podcast, Fashion People, Puck correspondent and 20-year fashion veteran Lauren Sherman and a rotating cast of industry insiders discuss what fashion people are really talking about behind the scenes of the star-studded business, from creative director switcheroos to M&A drama, DTC downfalls, and Met Gala mishaps. Fashion People, a presentation of Odyssey in partnership with Puck, is available now wherever you get your podcasts.
I guess we'll start then. We'll start.
Hello, everyone. I am Kimberly Adams. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make today make sense.
I'm Kai Risnall. It is a Monday. We're going to do the huge, which is, if you're new to the podcast, it's news and then make me smile or two, and then we will set you on your merry way. So, Ms. Adams, let us begin with the news. You go first.
Yes, this is, you know, news is supposed to be new. This isn't exactly new, but it's a good analysis of it. But it's an ongoing issue. I know, really selling it, aren't I? This is an ongoing issue that is being highlighted in the Washington Post. Hat tip to our editor Stephanie Seek here at Marketplace, who put this in Slack today. And the headline is, seniors are stuck home alone as health aides flee for higher paying jobs. And it's chock full of numbers, but the gist of it is there are a lot of people getting older and needing help at home, many of whom don't want to go to nursing homes because COVID scared everyone, but also they want to age in place in their own homes. And they built up all of these systems to allow themselves to age in place. And there are not enough, not nearly enough, home health care workers to provide the need. And so waiting lists are months and months long, if you can even get home health care support. And it's one of these things that up until recently, money could fix it. You know, if you had enough money, you probably weren't going to feel this problem very keenly. Lower income people were definitely feeling it. And that work almost always falls to daughters as opposed to sons. And so certain segment of the population could kind of forget that this was happening. But now the shortage is so bad that it kind of doesn't matter how much money you have. It's still going to be extraordinarily hard to find home health care and support for your aging loved one, or if you have a loved one with disabilities, severe disabilities, who needs help. And it's interesting because people are really running into this. It means all these people who plan to age in place are really going to struggle to do so and may end up having to go to an assisted living facility when they didn't plan to. The wages in this industry are extraordinarily low. And if you remember back when the Democrats were pushing the Build Back Better plan, there was something like 400 million, I think, or was it billion? It probably was million. Something like 400. It was something like $400 million to boost wages for home health care workers, basically to boost the, So I'm reading this in the Washington Post article.
Okay.
The Biden administration in 2021 sought $400 billion in new spending for home and community-based care channeled through Medicaid to states. So basically what that would have done was boost the Medicare or Medicaid reimbursement rates for home health care workers to allow these companies to pay their workers more, because a lot of these jobs are like minimum wage jobs in many places. And it's very hard work. It requires a degree. Often you have to be, I think, at least an LPN usually. And you're moving people, you're helping them, you know, go to the bathroom, you're bathing them. And it's very hard work for very little money. And people are basically like, why would I do this when I can make more money working in an Amazon warehouse and not have to clean up after someone? So it is an ongoing crisis. We had a chance to deal with it, but we didn't, or at least start to address it. But if you are planning to age in place, or if you have a loved one that you anticipate is going to need care, start making those plans now, because it's going to be a challenge.
Yeah, it really is. Sorry, I was just thinking of my mom.
Way to start.
Okay.
You go ahead.
Yeah, right. So here are my two. It's kind of one and a half. One's a data point, although important, and the other one is existential, really, for the people on Puerto Rico. So Puerto Rico still recovering from Hurricane Fiona. It's going to be weeks, months, conceivably years before things are back to even where they were before this storm hit. As we know, Puerto Rico has been challenged, shall we say, in recuperating for a whole lot of structural, political, and also, and here comes my point, logistical reasons. So there is a ship waiting off Puerto Rico now loaded with diesel fuel, which Puerto Rico really needs to fire generators because their power grid is down. The problem is that that ship is a foreign flagged ship which has come from Texas. And there is a law on the books in the United States called the Jones Act, which dates from 1920, which says, and I will read from the article here in NBC News, but you can find this anywhere. Jones Act, otherwise known as the Merchant Marine Act of 1920, requires that goods shipped between American ports, and remember this one came from Texas and it's going to Puerto Rico, which is an American port. Those ships must be, right? Hang on a minute, scrolling. Must be carried exclusively, cargo must be carried exclusively by ships built primarily in the United States and have U.S. citizens as its owners and crews. And that has done catastrophic damage to relief for specifically Puerto Rico, but way all kinds of other incidents. It's a 100-year-old law that does not acknowledge the realities of global trade today, the withering of the American maritime shipping force, right, which we just don't build ships like we used to. And global trade is a thing, and others can do it cheaper and get us ships and get us cargo and get us the goods we want for not as much money as it would cost if it hadn't been for the Jones Act. So read up on the Jones Act. It's important, and it does sort of have life and death consequences now in Puerto Rico. It's kind of a big deal. There's a whole reform the Jones Act, abolish the Jones Act thing. Congress, of course, sorry to get on my hobby horse here, will do nothing about it because of the shipping lobby. But it's a big deal. It's a big deal.
I'll point to another Washington Post article that I saw over the weekend where it looks at population changes in American territories. Mm-hmm. While population is growing in many states, pretty much all of the U.S. territories are losing population at an extraordinary rate. So you're talking U.S. Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico, American Samoa, Guam, Northern Marianas. U.S. Virgin Island has lost like 18% of its population from 2010 to 2020. Puerto Rico, more than 11%. And these numbers are really, you know, harsh, but it reflects a lot of what you're talking about, of how difficult it is to get development in these parts of the U.S. that have these restrictions, but don't necessarily have the kind of economic support that states do, you know, on the mainland.
Yeah. Yep, totally. Here's my other one. It's a demographic data point. It comes from the good people at Pew Research Center out with some new research today talking about women in the labor force in the post-pandemic economy. We talked about them a lot, these women having left the labor force in the pandemic. Because, and let's be clear here, we're not past the pandemic. That's not what I'm saying. But women left or were forced out of the labor force in the pandemic because they had to care for people, they had to care for children, they had to care for the parents. And as Kimberly said a minute ago, these duties fall almost exclusively to women, right? And we talked about that a lot. Molly and I did. So here's some data from Pew showing that college-educated women have now largely returned to the labor force and, in point of fact, are now a larger share of the U.S. labor force, U.S. college-educated labor force than men are, right? So college-educated women are basically back. Here, though, is the nut graph. The upshot of these disparate changes in the labor force by gender and education is that women have increased their representation in the college-educated labor force since 2019. At the same time, there has not been much change in the gender composition of the labor force that has some college or less education. That is to say, women with some or no college education are still out of the labor force because they are still, my guess would be, performing those care duties, performing those home duties that, as we have said, fall almost entirely to women. And I just think we all ought to be aware of that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was reading something else, which I can't remember where it was, about basically that daycare is now a luxury good because it has become,
it
was an Axios actually, where it's so expensive now.
So expensive.
That it's to the point of being just unaffordable for so many people. And again, you have a relatively low wage workforce, yet the cost is so high.
Yeah.
All right. Monday fun day.
Come on. Let's go. All right, you go first. You grabbed my Jupiter thing, so you go first. Oh, mine's crazy. All right, so I'll go first super quick. So we're going to put this on the show page, and had I had more time today, I'd had Marissa grab the audio from it. But on American Airlines flights, the last number of months, there has been weird, spooky noises coming from the intercom system. The crew doesn't know anything about it. The flight deck crew doesn't know anything about it. It comes over the intercom, and it sounds... And, you know, protect your kids' ears because we're trying to maintain the non-E here. But it's either somebody in immense pain or somebody having relations, shall we say. And it's just freaky. And so we're going to put this article on the show page, and you can listen to it for yourself. It's just really weird. American Airlines says they are investigating. It's just freaky. Just freaky.
Yeah, it's weird. Very weird noise is noises.
Yes.
You know what? I'm going to let you have Jupiter because I want to talk about DART.
No, go ahead. You do Jupiter real quick. Just
okay. So tonight, if you have the opportunity and it's not cloudy, go look outside because Jupiter is super close to the Earth tonight. It's going to be its closest opposition, as they call it, since 1963. And you're going to be able to see like the stripes on Jupiter with binoculars, basically, as opposed to like a full powered telescope. And one of the reasons that it's going to be particularly clear and bright is because not only is it really close to the Earth, but it's exactly opposite the sun. So it's getting like the full sunlight hitting it while it's close to us. So you're going to get a really clear view of Jupiter tonight. And so if you get a chance, and supposedly, even with binoculars, you might be able to even see some of Jupiter's moons. So if you have a clear sky and you can get out tonight, get out there and look. You should be able to see Jupiter with your naked eye, but if you have binoculars, or even better, if you've got a telescope, you should get some really nice views.
That's cool. I just think that's super cool.
It is. And, you know, right. So we're waiting, of course. Yes, because there's so much space stuff that's exciting. So we are waiting at the time of this broadcast for the impact of the DART mission, where it's trying to crash a space vehicle into an asteroid to see if we can, you know, see if we can deflect it to avoid a, you know, Armageddon type situation or, you know, I mean, the movie, I guess actual Armageddon too. Anyway, to make sure that we don't have like a dinosaur level wipe out the population of the Earth if an asteroid hits us. So NASA is testing to see if they can knock an asteroid out of its orbit so that they can see if there was an asteroid coming our way, could they knock it out of orbit? So that test is happening tonight. We'll probably be done by the time you hear this, and we'll have more to talk about it later.
Did you see, by the way, before we start the next thing, did you see the, oh my God, I can't even believe hang on a minute, clicking, I'm just clicking here. Okay, so inside the Office of the Director for National Intelligence, right, ODNI, the head intelligence person in the United States, there is an office called the National Intelligence Manager for Aviation, right, which integrates all the intelligence to safeguard the global aviation and air community, right, to include rockets and all that jazz. Their official seal, right, it says, and I'll get this into Slack and it'll get on the show notes. Their official seal for the Office of Director of National Intelligence of the National Intelligence Manager for Aviation, right, NIM Aviation, has, let's see, it looks like some kind of 747, 737 thing, reconnaissance thing. It's got like an F-22. It's got some observation aircraft on it. And then it's got another one. And then down in the bottom corner is a little flying saucer. Swear to God. Hang on a minute. Sharing to Slack. It is amazeballs. There's a little flying saucer. Hang on. Here it comes.
Hey.
This is like Slack in real time. Okay.
So you guys gosh, it's we'll there. And we're sure that this is not a scam?
No. It's like the thing. It's the thing. And it's like the Jupiter 2 flying saucer, you know? Anyway, that's what it is. All right, that's my little space weirdness thing. Okay, so we will segue from that awkwardly into this. It is time for us to ask for your support. The economy, obviously, inflation right now, number one issue for voters in the upcoming midterms. This is what we do at Marketplace. We do the economy. We do tech. We do culture. We do business. We do all those things that can make you smart about what's in the news and what's in the news today and now and for the next number of months, dare say years, will be the economy and inflation. And we need your help to get there. Marketplace.org/givesmart is how you can help us out.
Right. And on the donation form, you'll be able to see that we have new hoodies, which are super cute. And we now accept. And yes, we have hoodies.
Wow. All right.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just a talent, man.
They're supposed to send you one, I think.
No. All right.
No? Okay. Well, no, you can have a hoodie if you like, people who are listening, because and we now accept PayPal and Apple Pay if you're using Safari and an
nice
Apple device. And again, you can go to marketplace.org/givesmart. We would really appreciate your support. If you feel like you've gotten a little bit smarter listening to the show, we'd be very grateful. And that is it for today. Tomorrow, we are going to do a deep dive on the intersection of politics and art and why big media companies and studios are getting a lot of pressure to conform to, shall we say, a certain kind of politics, and what the reaction to the casting of certain characters in certain major movies and franchises might tell us about the country that we live in.
And there we go.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'll be a good conversation.
Yes.
Adam Silver.
I'm looking forward to it. Make Me Smart is produced by Marissa Cabrera. Today's program was engineered by Drew Jostad.
Our senior producer is Bridget Bonner. The director of On Demand is Donna Tam. So there we go. There we go. That's
how did you stumble upon this patch thing with a seal?
I was on Twitter all the weekend. I was on Twitter. I try not to be, but I was.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.